Present, and the court will proceed to the sixth case, Hayes versus Potter. Mr. Madden.
And then there was one. Good afternoon, Your Honor. Good morning, still.
Still,
counsel. Yeah. May it please the court. Did the manager employees of the defendant have knowledge of plaintiff's prior claims of discrimination at the time they acted on her requests for permanent light duty, and does it matter to the outcome? Respectfully, yes, they did know, and yes, it does matter. Your Honors will recall that the jury verdict was broken down, in this retaliation case, was broken down into five insular questions involving adverse acts, knowledge, motivation, damages, and mixed motives. The jury answered correctly, or affirmatively, with respect to adverse acts, but stumbled as to knowledge on question two.
So, Mr. Madden, it seems to me most of your argument really goes to the point that Ms. Green should have known, or most likely knew, or something. And I don't see in this record something that would have compelled the jury to find that she had actual knowledge. If she supervised 1,300 people, we don't even know if she opened her own mail. It's not at all uncommon in offices of people with those kinds of supervisory responsibilities to have an assistant opening the mail and, you know, routing it in appropriate ways. Not every piece winds up in the desk of the manager. That's just, I mean, that's not at all uncommon. And we don't have testimony, for example, about how she handled mail opening, or about whether she personally reviewed every complaint, or about whether the EEO investigators, in fact, did go interview her, as I take it, Ms. Smallwood indicated would have been a common practice. There's just all these gaps, and we're left with her statement that she had no recollection of this, and the overall circumstances. So although the jury might well have been entitled to find that she did know, why wasn't it equally entitled to find that she didn't?
Well, I think, again, it just goes to the cumulative nature and the weight of the evidence. If we're talking about the mails, there were three direct correspondences to Ms. Green regarding complaints of discrimination and
vengeful
acts. Do we
know she opened them? I don't know if you've had these kinds of jobs, but I have, where this stuff floods in, and you don't necessarily look at all of it.
Sure. Here's what we do know. If we look to the testimony of Pfizer and Smallwood, in their discussions, Smallwood testifies that she gave background information to Green, specifically about the permanent light duty request, because she says Green had been receiving letters from plaintiffs. Pfizer, likewise, testifies that while she denies that she was being responsible in any fashion on the permanent light duty request, she testifies that she's in communications with Willie Murray and is responding to plaintiff on the permanent light duty request at his direction because Green had gotten letters from the plaintiff regarding her requests. Murray, incidentally, is also carbon copied on some of those letters, and plaintiff testified. He's, in fact, mentioned in one of those letters that plaintiff says she spoke to him directly, and plaintiff also testified that she spoke to Mr. Murray directly as well.
So why does that compel the jury to disbelieve Ms. Green's assertion that she has no recollection of seeing any of these materials? Isn't that what juries do? They decide who to believe and who not to believe?
They do. But we have to keep in mind that Ms. Green, in the universe of evidence, there's admittance, there's negation, and then there's I don't recall. She doesn't say that she was not aware of these complaints. She doesn't say that she did not get these mailings.
But
she simply says that she didn't recall.
But I guess I don't understand why there wasn't more vigorous examination of her, like what her practices were. Did someone else open the mail? I mean, that's something that could have been elicited. I understand that
sure.
She said, I'm sorry, I don't recall it, but mm-hmm. It seems to me the ball was dropped a little here in terms of pushing it on cross-examination, that you could have, that I don't know if you were you know, asking the questions below, but
I was not.
It seems to me that that's where the ball was dropped, because then you could really try to build a case. It would certainly still be a circumstantial case, but some of the issues the judge would raise could have been fleshed out.
Sure. As an appellate counsel, I surely would have loved to have seen those direct questions there. I wasn't the trial counsel, and they weren't. But here, again, we had direct evidence from the plaintiff that she wrote the letters, she addressed the letters, and she mailed the letters. And therefore, I think we've got a legal presumption that those mailings are delivered, especially when we couple it on to the evidence I just mentioned to Judge Wood, that testimony from Pfizer and Smallwood indicate a recognition that Green had received those letters and was asking them for background information regarding plaintiff's permanent light duty requests.
But, you know, not to make a, you know, unflattering comparison, but it reminds me of a lot of prisoner cases where prisoners write letters to the warden complaining about certain conditions of confinement, whatever they may be, and under the constitutional statutes, under something like 1983, unless the warden is really the direct actor, there's no respondeat superior liability. So you need to find, you need to show the warden's actual knowledge. And there, the cases are legion in which courts find that merely because a letter was addressed to the warden doesn't mean that the warden had actual knowledge, because it's a sense that goes to an office. It's not like getting a letter at your home, where certainly these post box rules have more force. If a letter comes to your house, you're presumed to have received it, and perhaps you can rebut that presumption. But it's, you know, as Judge Williams said, you know, when we're looking at a jury verdict, with the deference we're supposed to give to jury verdicts, we actually have to find that the jury couldn't possibly have come to the conclusion it came to. And it's hard on this record to say that.
Well, I respectfully submit that if we take account of those letters and the presumption that goes with it, the testimony of Smallwood and Pfizer, defendant employees, we take into consideration the EEO complaints that had been made, the internal EEO complaints, and then incorporate into that all of the oral testimony regarding the process of the EEO complaint, the background information that Green admits that she sought, we've got that fabric. It's unreasonable that she didn't know. Defendant's entire position in this case, I mean, they sort of hem and haw about who was the actual decision maker. Finally, they hitch their cart to Green and say Green was the only one who makes decisions on permanent light duty requests. Green testified, I get background information from all my labor relations people and the supervisors. I talked to Hawkins, I talked to Murray, I talked to Smallwood, I talked to Pfizer, all of whom, there's no dispute that Smallwood certainly knew of all of these things. And I think we have to take into consideration the fact that Green is given the opportunity to deny it and doesn't. She simply says, I don't recall.
Well, maybe so, that's a responsible thing to do. Maybe it would be perjurious to say, I didn't receive it.
Certainly.
We've got to allow that in the universe of possible. You know, occasionally, I don't recall is what ought to be stated.
Oh, absolutely. And I don't mean to suggest that she should have been disingenuous or should have made up one answer or the other. But what I'm saying is, until we devise the machine that can look into the hearts of men and say whether they speak true or no, plaintiff has done all that she can to prove that she had, that Green had knowledge of these things. And from this record, we submit that it's no
Green,
reasonable person.
Green is the regional, I think, supervisor. Was her situs the same as the plaintiff's? I mean, just in location?
I believe she was at the same facility. She had oversight over a number of facilities, but her situs was at that plant.
Thank you, Mr. Madden. Mr. Pugh.
May it please the Court, Your Honor, Counsel. Your Honor, we think the record is pretty clear here that the district court did not abuse its discretion. Our briefs speak to that, and in fact, admissions by the plaintiff speak to that, by the appellant speak to that. The standard, of course, was whether the jury verdict was against the manifest weight of the evidence. So we're going to ask for the district court was required to look at the verdict and ask whether there were whether reasonable inferences in favor of the verdict support the jury deciding. The reasonable inferences are there. They're certainly there. And
you would agree the jury could have come out the other way on this question.
Absolutely.
On this record. Yeah.
But, of course, the focal point of this court's inquiry is not the inferences that could be drawn contradictory to the verdict, but simply whether there's some evidence in support of the verdict that would allow the verdict to stand. The district court said that, in fact, reminded Ms. Hayes and her lawyer that while, in fact, there could be inferences drawn against the verdict, there also are inferences drawn in favor. And, in fact, the court, the jury was not required, there's nothing that required the jury to draw inferences against the fact that Ms. Green did not have the requisite knowledge. And as the court has said in the past, and frequently, that it's not a super jury. This is not a time for the appellant to have a second bite at the apple. They lost the trial. The evidence in favor of the verdict is pretty clear. Six plants, South Suburban facility. That's what Ms. Green was responsible for. And it's 3,000 employees, 1,300 employees at Ms. Hayes' facility alone. Now, the appellant said, well, Ms. Green admitted that she might have known Ms. Hayes, but knowing Ms. Hayes is a lot different than knowing every single piece of paper that Ms. Hayes would have submitted. Ms. Green did also testify clearly and without cross-examination on this point that she didn't recall Hayes' EEO activity or protected activity, the letters or the complaints.
Now, do you think a lack of recollection is the same thing for legal purposes here as a denial? If she had no memory of it, would that also tend to negate a retaliatory motive?
I don't suggest that the jury had to take the I don't recall and had to infer that I don't recall means I never knew or I didn't know before the decision. But I say that the jury was, in fact, entitled to draw that inference. There were three inferences that could have been drawn from that. First of all, whether she ever knew. Second of all, whether she knew at the time of the decision. And third of all, whether she knew at the time of trial. The question itself, the verdict question, puts it on the plaintiff. Says, you have to prove that she knew. If the plaintiff didn't ask any questions, didn't solidify what I don't recall means.
Did this response of hers was elicited by government counsel?
It was, Your Honor. Yeah. In fact, she was pressed on it. You don't remember? I'm sorry, I don't recall. That's what is in the transcript. Now, to be sure, just in terms of overall fairness, Ms. Hayes had her day in court. She had a chance to make the same arguments to the jury that her counsel quite ably is making to you. But the jury chose to decide for the defendant on this point, and in fact, in the case overall. This trial, of course, is not merely a tryout on the road to making a final decision. The final decision was made. The verdict is not against the manifest weight. The instruction that they issued before the court was agreed upon. Questions that really just jump out from the page. Did appellant's counsel ask Ms. Green if she knew? Did he ask Ms. Hayes if she knew whether Green was aware or whether she ever told Green herself? Did the lawyer ask anyone else whether there were any rumors such to provide an admission that Green knew? The answer to all three of those questions are no. On that record, there can be no reversal of the jury verdict. The documents that the plaintiff has referred to, talking about a number of things that Ms. Hayes may have sent, regardless of whether Ms. Hayes was a frequent filer, it is, as we would agree with you, Judge Woods, that there's nothing that compels the jury to find that Ms. Green had in fact read those documents or remembered them.
But you're arguing that there's sort of a separate mailbox rule for inter-office communications? And there's a common law mailbox rule in notice situations that says it's presumed if somebody puts something in the in the Postal Service, for example, apropos of his case, that it's received by the recipient. But it seems to me that you're arguing that, this rule has less force in an inter-office situation where something goes, you know, to the human resources manager, or it goes to the director of operations, or goes to whomever, and we would not have the same presumption of receipt and knowledge?
Perhaps there could be a presumption of receipt of the letters that were mailed, which were a year before the decision was made, not at the time the decision was made. However, there should be no presumption of knowledge here, particularly for the reason that you pointed out in the warden cases. Although we didn't cite those cases, it takes an extra step to show that the person you're pointing to actually knew what was in the letters.
Mm-hmm.
Quite reasonably, the jury could infer from the evidence that, you know, Ms. Green is at the top of the pile. She's making the decision, but she's not going to look at every single piece of paper on her desk. And even if she looks at it, at the time that those papers are sent in, we're talking about a year later at the time of the decision, as the question reads. Your Honor, shortly, just as to the theory that the appellant has raised about document supremacy, we believe that that theory has no basis. Mostly because it asks the court to trample the Seventh Amendment. It asks the court to go back and re-examine whether the jury should have listened to the papers or listened to the testimony. The jury was entitled to look at that and draw from it what it is. Given that there was evidence on both sides, it cannot be said that the verdict was against the manifest weight. If there are no further questions, with that we ask the court to affirm the district court's decision.
Thank you, Mr. Pugh. Mr. Madden?
Thank you. Just briefly, counsel made reference to specific language of the question number two, the verdict question. If we look at the specific language, the language says managers, plural. And it's important now to stress a point that didn't jump out at the briefs. The district court made a key finding in denying the motion for a trial, saying that there was no evidence of communication between Smallwood and Green so as to poison the well of Green. Clearly that's not true. Smallwood testified that she gave background information to Green in response to Green's getting this general information on the permanent light duty request. So if we look at the specific question, plural managers, so we ought to look at the knowledge, the universal knowledge of all of the managers who are providing input into the decision on the permanent light duty request. Beyond that, it would be a matter of some irony if we were to establish a new mailbox rule for the post office in this case. Defendant's argument is that from the opening of the case, plaintiff is a chronic filer. She's a chronic filer. She's such a pain in management's side. They have to deal with her all the time. And it's a matter of some incredulity, I think, for them not to suggest that, well, she's got six plants and she wouldn't know who she is. They know who she was. And based on the weight of the evidence, we submit that no reasonable person could find otherwise, and we ask this court to reverse and remand for a new trial.
Thank you, Sven.
Thank you.
All right, thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement. Court will stand in recess.
File, because once that is filed, you have the right, and